10 WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic
ABC
Media
News
app.
I'm Chuck Sievertson. They've all followed the court's orders, says ABC's Aaron Katursky.
Donald Trump and all 18 of his co-defendants who allegedly formed what prosecutors call a criminal organization have turned themselves in. Fingerprinted, photographed, assigned inmate numbers. Among the last to surrender in Georgia, former Assistant Attorney General Jeffrey Clark. Prosecutors say he wanted to send an official letter falsely claiming the Justice Department had identified significant concerns that may have impacted the outcome of the election in multiple states.
Still, hundreds missing on Maui. An official list of 388 names has been released, compiled by the FBI. Maui's police chief hoping those on it or those who know them will see it and contact them.
We need your help now and each and every day because we are only going to get through this if we're working together as one.
Utility crews working to fix tens of thousands of power outages in Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania after violent storms, including tornadoes. This is ABC News. This woman's safe and a man accused of creating a day of terror for her arrested, says ABC's Alex Stone.
It was a brief moment when a woman at a Chevron gas station in Yavapai County, Arizona, passed a posted note to another woman asking her to call 911. It launched a response and found the blue Honda van she was in along Interstate 40. Inside, her alleged kidnapper was found, who investigators say used a wig to pretend to be an Uber driver when he picked her up in Phoenix. He was not a stranger. The two knew each other before, but he had taken her and restrained her. She was rescued by police.
Thank goodness this customer took her seriously and the customer called 911.
Kristen Green with the Yavapai County Sheriff's Department.
Alabama is seeking to become the first state to carry out an execution by nitrogen hypoxia. State Attorney General's office asking the state Supreme Court to set an execution date for a man using a process by which he's forced to only breathe nitrogen, depriving him of oxygen so that he passes out and dies. It has not been tested yet. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding anglers that hook and line season for lake sturgeon is right around the corner, starting on September 2nd and running through September 30th in certain waters. If you're planning on harvesting a lake sturgeon, you'll need your general 2023 fishing license and a valid hook and line lake sturgeon tag. Only one fish may be harvested per season, and it must have a minimum length of 60 inches. Wisconsin Assembly Speaker Robin Voss on Thursday ordered the creation of four new task forces in Wisconsin, targeting artificial intelligence, childhood obesity, truancy, and human trafficking. Notably, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers also created a task force to address artificial intelligence. However, Governor Evers' AI task force will focus on Wisconsin's workforce, while Senator Voss's task force will study the potential of artificial intelligence while ensuring its responsible and ethical deployment. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Hi, I'm Joey Erickson from Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, and here are some events that are coming up in our community.
On August 26th, check out the Amory Farmers Market. It takes place from 9 a.m. till noon. On August 30th, enjoy Michael Park and a free concert. It's Patchouli performing live at 6 p.m. On August 31st, enjoy live music from Alyssa Hansen Duo and a classic car show. It's at Amory Ale Works. That's from 5 until 8:30 p.m. And on September 13th, St. Joseph's Catholic Church is hosting Human Trafficking Awareness Night with special guest Ashley Moore. To get more details, log on castmn.org.
If you have an event you like us to tell others about, let me know. Email me at joey.erickson@civicmedia.us, and we'll tell the community all about it. Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
The kids are heading back to class, but when the subject is school, we have to talk about the first kindergarten started in Wisconsin. Marguerite Schurz created what is known as America's First Kindergarten in 1856, teaching a small class at her family's home in Watertown. It's about 50 miles west-northwest of Milwaukee. So can you guess, when did kindergarten become part of the state's public school system? The answer coming up. Schurz learned about kindergarten in Germany, where the idea was common. It wasn't in America, and her class grew so quickly, she had to move to a bigger space. Today, the building remains as a Watertown museum. So did you guess when kindergarten became part of the public school system in the state? It was 1898. But 42 years prior, the Schurz School started it all, making this a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
88 degrees, the latest day in the calendar year to date, obliterating the previous record by 16 degrees. Heat and extreme dryness are driving an unusually high number of wildfires for mid-October in the Pacific Northwest all the way up into Canada, according to the Federal National Interagency Fire Center. Air quality in the Puget Sound has again reached unhealthy levels due to the fires.
It broke the previous record by 16 degrees?
Yep.
Everything's fine. Why worry?
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about as we come to you from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Today we're going to be talking about our time at the Iowa Hawkeye Area Labor Council Steak Fry. And this is one of those events that I've always wanted to come to something like this, because you know, you think about Iowa, you think about the caucuses, you think about all the participation, you know, democracy being participatory, people being involved, active, engaged, you know, having a beer with the candidates. This is what it's supposed to be. And today we spent a good bit of time rubbing elbows with all of the local candidates who have came out to talk to people and give their little spiel. And also we had, you know, Liz Mathis, the wonderful woman who came out and is running for House here. Also Mike Franken, the guy running for Senate. He is a fabulous guy. You're going to hear his interview a little bit later. But, you know, the idea that you're surrounded by these people and these candidates who have ideas and thoughts and the direction we should be heading. What we didn't talk about, what there was no talk about whatsoever, is the things that divide us. Everybody that I spoke with, and you'll hear some of those interviews and also the podcast, we're going to throw out some additional ones down the road. It was all the same kind of, hey, how do we make people's lives better? It's the stuff we talk about here on this program all the time. From your local county supervisor to the guy running for U.S. Senate, it was all, how do we do things that make working people's lives better? And I want to thank Junior and the good folks here at IBEW Local 405 for opening up your hall to us and sharing this incredible event. You know, there had to be a couple, 150, 200 people who showed up to this event and got access to these candidates. This is what it's supposed to be. Not getting the 30-second interviews on the F channel or whatever propaganda network is out there, but actually sitting down and talking about real issues. And when people got together, when they get together and talk about real issues, you know what they do talk about? Like I said, talk about how they're going to make their lives better. And for me, we're in this moment. I keep coming back to this. We need to be investing heavily in infrastructure, and we've started that. We're down the path. The $1.2 trillion that the Democrats and Joe Biden have moved forward on is a good start. You drive here through the state of Iowa, it's got some rough roads. It's got some rough infrastructure. There's an incredible opportunity for investment. And oh, by the way, please, Iowa, when the money comes around for, and I'm talking to the Republican governor, when the money comes around to invest in broadband across your state, your rural areas are in really bad shape. And this is, again, talking about how it's not about rural or urban. It's not about the cities versus the suburbs or the farmland. This is about getting access for everybody. And when we were in these you know, isolated places, there's nothing. There is no internet access whatsoever. And you talk to people, and it's much like where I live. I pay an extraordinarily high price to get the internet that we get, and it's not bad, but the amount that we have to pay to get something that right now is a necessity is outrageous, which is why I'm thrilled to see that this investment is going to happen and is happening. Now, the other part of this is the $1.2 trillion, it's not enough. It was never enough. And we were saying this back when it passed, you know, it's a good start. It sounds like a lot of money. But when you put the American Society of Civil Engineers report up against it, that says right now, today, we need about $4.8 trillion. That $1.2 trillion is just about a quarter. It's a quarter of what we need. And you go across the states that we've gone to so far on our Working Class Heroes radio tour, and we keep coming back to, man, there's a lot of things that need to be upgraded. Boy, there's a lot of investments that could be made. There are a lot of opportunities to create jobs, to leave something positive behind. And this is the story that we're getting from people. Again, it's not the divisive stuff. It's not the stuff you're going to hear on the F channel. It's not the stuff that the right wing keeps saying, oh, that's Democrats only care about this, that, or the other thing. They care about jobs. They care about infrastructure. They care about a better future for their kids. And education, overwhelmingly, education at the forefront of people's minds. Because look, we've just gone through an election cycle not too long ago where the moneyed interests are doing everything in their power to destroy our public education system. And here in Iowa, and you're going to hear this from people while we're here, they're trying to do all of the horrible things that we've seen in other states. You know, the voucher schemes, the privatization schemes, the underfunding. And the thing is you talk to people here and they go, look what happened to Kansas. We're following the Kansas model. We're going down this path of starving our public schools, which everybody I talk to, the pride that Iowa was in, always in the very top tier of education and education spending in this country, the fact that in Iowa, they said, look, we got the best public education system in the entire country. And I think one guy wanted to fight me over it. But here's the thing. They got a governor. They got a Republican-controlled legislature. They've got the Republicans who are doing everything they can do to starve that. And it's what happened in my state of Pennsylvania years ago. Pennsylvania is now at the bottom of education spending. And there's a guy running for governor there who wants to take him even further down to the bottom. Did we learn nothing from Kansas? And the voucher schemes? And this is why I have such great hope for Iowa. You know, the people that we were talking about get it. The folks that we've had conversations with, they get it. These privatization schemes, these voucher schemes are just another way to make the wealthy wealthier. And they're putting up a fight, and that is great. So, you know, when we were at the steak fry, and who doesn't love a good steak fry? I mean, and these weren't, you know, you think about steak fries, you know, a little tiny. These were monster. I guess it is Iowa after all. These were monster steaks, and just as you would imagine, they got a big open pit in the back, and they're just firing stuff up. It was an incredible event. Everyone should experience this. In fact, in every state, we should start these. There should be these in every state to bring people together and to bring candidates together, and you know, roll up the sleeves and do the hard work. But you know, I go back to this idea that, again, what we're told our divisions are what define us. But when we're doing this trip, as we're talking to people and we're having events and we're walking picket lines and we're doing that stuff, everyone keeps talking about the same things. It's about the jobs. It's about education. It's about infrastructure. It's about the kitchen table stuff. It's about making lives better. But here in Iowa, anyway, as we've been talking to people, all of the bad ideas, all of the attacks, all of the right-wingery, all of the privatization schemes, and of course, front and center, you know, Iowa is a no-rights-at-work state already. They've been a no-rights-at-work state for years, and they're going even further, attacking unemployment insurance, attacking workers' compensation. Everything that they can do to make things worse for working people. And I go back to my frame. My original frame still sticks to this day. Republicans hate working people. It comes out in their policies. It comes out in what they're bringing to us every day. The stuff that they ram through like thieves in the night. For instance, this is one of those examples. There are a lot of shoulder injuries from the workers who work in the packing plants, the meat packers and the folks who, there are a lot of those jobs still here. Shoulder injuries are something that happen quite often because it's a repetitive use thing. It's something that, you know, by doing the job, you're going to have these injuries. So what have they done? They've gone and made it much harder to collect workers' compensation for shoulder injuries. They've basically carved that out and said, yeah, we know that's the nature of the work. Not making the work better, not changing the ergonomics, not getting OSHA in there to fix things. No. It's all about saving these big companies money. And what's, I guess, encouraging is people see it. People are active around it, engaged around it, angry around it, and ready and willing to do something about it. And as we've been traveling around and having these events and talking to people, it's that action. It's that wanting to take action and make things better. This sense of pride that our community was the best and we can make it the best place again, that keeps coming out again and again and again, even though our Republican friends and corporate America keep trying to do everything they can think of to, well, make that not so. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'm going to share some thoughts from the Steak Fry. I'm going to sit down with Liz Mathis. She's running for U.S. House here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District and got a really good shot of being the next congresswoman from this area. So we're going to take a quick break right back after this. Remember, if you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get yours, you'll find ours, from Stitcher to Podbean and everywhere in between. Quick break, right back after this.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African-American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State-Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and demand for a decent life for all men, women, and children. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, here on the Working Class Radio Tour. One of the things I love about doing these events is you get to run into people who are doing good things and hopefully going to change the dynamics of our politics. And that's why I've asked Liz Mathis to come sit down with us. Liz is running for Congress here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, I believe.
Yes, they switched it. It used to be 1, now it's 2.
So, you know, I appreciate you taking some time for me. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So what's the issue? Well, you know, what do we do to change the dynamics in this country? We seem so polarized. We bought the red hat, the blue hat. What do we do to pull the country back together?
I think we find candidates that are a good fit for the district. So I grew up on a farm. You know, my parents were World War II vets. They came home, you know, after World War II, and my mom had been in the cadet corps. You know, she was a nurse, and so she became the town doctor's nurse, and my dad started farming. And so they were leaders in the community, school board members. My dad was on the County Conservation Commission and the first no-till farmer in 1972 in Clinton County. So, you know, he started some innovation way back then. But I worked really hard. I worked hard on the farm. I, you know, hayed the cattle. I fed the cattle. We had a farrowing operation. I pulled pigs out of sows because I had the smallest hand. And then, you know, I drove a 4020 John Deere tractor made by union employees in Moline. And then detasseled corn. A couple of my crews were kids from the juvenile detention center, and somebody said, wow, that really helped you with your future in the Iowa State Senate, you know, to try to keep them from, you know, fighting most of the time during the lunch hour. So, yeah, I went on to the University of Iowa to study journalism, and I met my husband, and we got married and had 2 beautiful kids, and I had a great career in journalism for about 27 years. So I worked for KWWL-TV and KCRG-TV, both television stations within this very district. So I got to interview thousands of people, and because we have the Iowa caucuses, I was able to interview every presidential hopeful from Reagan to Obama, and covered tons of weather disasters and healthcare stories. And
so you've seen humanity up front.
I've seen humanity.
So the question then becomes, you know, how do we, you know, look, the country is red hat, blue hat. You know, we've bought teams.
Yeah.
I say labor is the place where we bring the country back together. It's the economy, stupid. All the fringe stuff, all of the attacks, all of the election deniers, of which your opponent seems to be as crazy as the next one. Mm-hmm. I think people want politicians who are going to address their needs, healthcare, education,
yes,
jobs. That's where the heart needs to be.
Yeah, it really does. After journalism, I worked for a mental health care center for kids, and then I ran for the Iowa State Senate. So the Republicans upended collective bargaining, and I really saw how unions came together and reacted to threatening forces and how they have climbed back from that in the state of Iowa. They create the best communities. We have a group here at the IBEW, the hall that we're talking in, who after the 2008 floods, they helped to get retired electricians their licenses back to rewire thousands of homes. We called it Old Farts Electric. And the IBEW supplied money to them, and they were able to do that. So not only are, you know, our unions, hardworking people, they do quality work, but they're embedded in their communities. And they care about, Rick, you're right, they care about health care. They care about their kids. You know, they care about what's happening in their community just like everybody else does. But their focus is to make sure people are making a great living and they're able to live a good life.
Yeah.
That's it.
Because I keep coming back to this. The Republicans and the right keeps throwing all this divisive stuff at us. Things meant to pit us against each other.
Sure.
While they're robbing us blind.
And, you know, as a working person, I have watched, you know, deindustrialization happen. I've watched the destruction of people's ability to join and form unions and to collectively bargain for better wages, hours, and conditions. And this is where I think Trump was the blind squirrel that found a nut. People are angry. People are hurting and suffering. And I look at my family. My family's basically the basket of deplorables. They were all racist. They were all misogynistic. They're all homophobic. They were always those things. We can justify one way or another, but that never made them vote. What made them vote was he was going to bring those jobs back. He was going to bring those union jobs back where they were able to support their families and have that American dream that we were sold. So this is where I want to take something positive out of what Trump has done. A lot of destruction in this country because of him. But the one thing I think he was right about is people want those jobs back. Mm-hmm. People want that dignity. And they don't want the factory jobs back or the steel mill jobs back. They want the union jobs back. They want what those union jobs afforded them, a decent lifestyle, a decent health care. That's what they want back.
But, Rick, Democrats have never wavered from that. They have wanted that all of these years. And then a shyster comes along, and he decides he's going to take the message back. He's going to say that he's the champion of the working person. And Democrats have always been the champions for workers. And let's look at the PRO Act. My opponent voted against the PRO Act.
Well, your opponent has voted against everything, if I'm not mistaken.
She's voted against
everything. The Recovery Act, Inflation Reduction Act, the infrastructure bill. Yep. She's voted against all of this.
But has
she taken any credit for it like the rest of the Republican Party?
Yes, she has. She took credit for it a couple of weeks later, and she said she found there was money for a lock and dam system, and she took full credit for the lock and dam system, which the Carpenters Union said, what are you doing? You know, we're working on the locks and dams. You know, so the problem with this is we have a lot of, including my opponent, a lot of Republicans saying they're for the working person, and they don't attend a strike. I mean, John Deere struck here, right? Yeah. And so we were on the line with John Deere. We've been on the line with the workers at Ingredient. We've made sure that we're there, and we let them know we have their backs, and that's the way it is. Now, you know, somebody can come in and do razzle-dazzle and say, oh, we protect workers. You know, I fight for workers. No, you don't. If you did, you would have voted for the PRO Act.
Absolutely. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Liz Mathis. She's a U.S. House candidate here in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District. LizMathis.com, the website, if you want to check that out. I got to ask you about, you know, abortion is a big issue right now. I have a lot of my female listener saying it's not November, it's Rovember. What do you see coming? And what's your position?
Yeah, I'm the candidate. I'm the pro-choice candidate. I don't believe government should be in our bedrooms. I don't believe that Ashley Hinson, my opponent, should be deciding, you know, the reproductive rights for the people of our district or for people all across the United States. She has co-sponsored a bill that would outlaw abortion for the entire, states, the United States. And she, with no exceptions to the life of the mother or rape or for incest, she is not the pro-choice candidate. I'm the pro-choice candidate. I care about women. She didn't vote for access to contraceptives either. So I want to go to Washington, codify Roe, and make sure that women make their own choices for their health care.
It's interesting you brought up contraception because I've been saying for over a decade now that Roe is not the ultimate end game. It's Griswold. It's that kind of control. And look, I've got two daughters. I'm very concerned about their future. And, you know, while I am not personally in favor of abortion, I'm never going to have one, clearly. But it's not the government's choice, and it should never be a bunch of old white guys' choices. It shouldn't be.
Well, what do you think if I say with one stroke of the pen, the Supreme Court took your daughters from first-class citizens to second-class citizens, not able to make their own health care choices?
No, I'm right there, and I want to make sure that they have that opportunity. So last question I've got for you. Obviously, campaign coming down to the last days. What's the message? What do we want people to know?
The message is we are concerned about the costs to families across the United States. Democrats want to bring those costs down, and they're starting to do that in a number of ways. So you've seen them, you know, pass a lot of, policy around health care. You've seen them pass the infrastructure bill that will create jobs and good wages. We want to make sure we secure Medicare and Social Security. We've seen the Republicans say that they're going to sunset it, and they're you know, talking behind closed doors about it. No way. And we want to protect women's reproductive rights. Those are the issues.
Do you buy that they were only kidding? I've had Republican listeners say they didn't really mean it.
Oh my gosh, Rick.
They didn't really mean it. They didn't mean it, Liz.
No, they
really mean it.
They do.
And your opponent voted against the insulin bill.
She did.
Which, again, is another one of those things that is really telling to me.
And against Inflation Reduction Act. She called the infrastructure bill socialistic spending spree. Yeah.
Yeah, and then took credit for it.
Nice alliteration.
Seems very, very, very well Republican. But Liz, I appreciate you taking time for it. I wish you the best. Once you're in Congress, we want you to come back and talk with us again and help move this country forward. Thanks so much.
I'd love to. Thank you.
Liz Mathis, congressional candidate here in Iowa. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out the program. Also, check out her website, LizMathis.com. We'll get links out back after this. Stick around to listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
This is the best of The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1933. That was the day garment factory owners locked out dressmakers in several shops throughout Los Angeles. The women garment workers, overwhelmingly Mexican, had been organizing with the ILGWU for over a month. They began conducting strikes at selected shops the previous month to press their demands. The women wanted union recognition, a 35-hour work week, and to homework, shop floor committees, a guaranteed wage, and more. Historian Douglas Monroy observed that their demands reflected the harsh working conditions that they faced. It was a volatile, competitive seasonal industry. Businesses worked tirelessly to undercut each other and job out the work. Women workers were routinely unemployed or underemployed, subject to widespread wage theft and discrimination. They were frustrated by promises of the new Industrial Recovery Act, which promised the right to organize, but held no provisions for enforcement. Employers flaunted the new legislation and continued to discharge workers for union activity. When the employers forced a lockout, Local 96 looked to the AFL's Central Labor Council to sanction a general dressmakers' strike, which started 4 days later on October 12th. As many as 3,000 Latina strikers maintained solid picket lines despite dozens of arrests. ILGWU organizer Rose Posada arrived from New York to help with food distribution and packing the picket lines. The rank-and-file leadership produced a bilingual strike bulletin and made daily radio announcements. The strike ended in arbitration that conceded few gains to the garment workers. But the women of Local 96 continued to organize throughout the Los Angeles area. They led a series of strikes that would eventually win the closed shop.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Throughout the country, newspaper subscribers are asking questions like, hey, who took my Saturday paper? What happened to those political cartoons and columns that I liked? Why does it take 2 days to get election results and sports scores? How did my local paper get filled with filler? Oh, and who doubled the price of the damn thing? The cause of all the above is a Wall Street concept called financialization, a euphemism for corporate plundering. Multibillion-dollar hedge funds like SoftBank Group, Alden Capital, and Chatham Asset have bought up thousands of our dailies and weeklies. They extract enormous profits not by making a better journalistic product for customers and the community, but by eliminating reporters, selling off each paper's real estate and assets, shriveling and standardizing content, and jacking up the paper's price. Like avaricious airlines, the profit strategy of these Wall Street newspapers is to monopolize the market, then charge more for less. But won't readers stop subscribing? Of course, they're leaving in droves. But hedge fund profiteers don't care, for their plan is to strip mine the business of every dime it has, take the profits, and leave town. For example, SoftBank, the Japanese owner of the Gannett chain, has pillaged hundreds of our local papers and is now making another round of deep cuts in its newsrooms, including dumping some 800 more journalists. The financializers are also requiring other employees to take unpaid leave and are suspending payments to their pensions. SoftBank bosses simply said, "We need to ensure our balance sheet remains strong." This is Jim Hightower saying, sure, take care of number one, but what about ensuring that local journalism remains strong, providing the information and connections that communities must have for strong democracies? But don't be silly, that's not part of the hedge fund business model.
This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we spend a little time here at the Hawkeye Area Labor Council Steak Fry, I love these things because you get to see all the candidates come through, and I'm fortunate enough to sit here with Admiral Mike Franken, who is running for Senate here in Iowa, taking some shots, taking some arrows, but hopefully our next senator from the great state of Iowa. Mike, thanks for taking time for us.
Very pleased, Rick. And those aren't so much arrows as they are broadsides, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, you're taking some hits. Too liberal, I guess, one out of touch, another because you want people to have health care, you want people to have good jobs. That too liberal, too?
Well, I mean, also, you've got a pretty long list. I'm at one hand, I'm a warmonger, and then the next one, I'm overly a peacenickish. So, and then also, I've been gone for a long time for the state of Iowa, so of course, I'm no longer an Iowan. So they add a lot of those things to me. But, you know, when I signed up for the United States Navy and was gone for 40 years doing that, no one said I couldn't come back. And I'm happy to be back in the place where ultimately I'll be buried.
There you go. Now, we saw down in Georgia, you know, a lot of attacks on military people as they're trying to steal their right to vote. We're in a moment where democracy is really under attack, something people like you and our military fought for.
Yeah, you know, the basic oath, which I have given 11 times, I believe, and I think Chuck Grassley's given it something thereabouts, and it says, you know, you solemnly swear that you will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So in my life, much of that was overseas, but an element of it domestically as well. But nothing looms as important as post-January 6, where 139 House members on the Republican ticket all believe that your vote really ought not count, in essence. And the very basic element of democracy is the right to vote, a representative vote. So it's very odd that this is the case that we're talking today. But what we're seeing is an element, a swirling darkness of America come to the forefront, and I believe it's time for significant leaders, serious leaders with serious solutions to step up and do their country's business.
Yeah, I look at someone like Chuck Grassley, who has been in the Senate for, well, a lot of years. I would have thought he would have had more courage in the moment that was January 6th and all of the election denial that's come out of this.
Well, he should speak to himself on this matter, but I think the two very important elements in anybody in elected office ought to be empathy. You ought to care for your fellow humankind. And the basic adage that my mother used to drone into us is care for those you've never met as much as those you know. And secondly, the most undersubscribed sensibility, professional sensibility, is leadership. And as you say, he has been AWOL, absent without leave on leadership, always takes the back seat. Even the photographs of January 6th, where he's in the background, standing against the wall, fiddling with his phone, you should be part of the solution. You have more history there than anybody. You should be part of the decision matrix. You should be involved in getting it done. And then rooting out the cause and holding those who are to account. And he has, again, before, during, and after, been AWOL.
How important is January 6th in this campaign? How important is his role in this and, you know, some of the statements that he made there around?
Well, it's a sliding scale. He has a covey of supporters who are absolutely nonplussed by this issue. Does not interest them. They believe it's just a bunch of patriots that are having a
Was it a regular day? Was it a regular day in our capital?
No, I'm thinking not. I've never seen such a thing, and I was apoplectic. I couldn't believe it. I've seen this in other countries up close, but never in the world standard bearer of democracy and in our throne of government. And shame on us as a nation, and shame on those who perpetrated this.
You know, January 6th, you know, a lot of the people who were there were former veterans, military people.
Yeah.
Are we concerned about the state of our military? And as someone who spent 40 years?
The military is pulled from society, the whole cross-section. So you have all the goods and the bads and the likes and the dislikes associated with it. Certainly, there were an inordinate number of military people who should know better. And they had no business. They should have had that realization, and I would expect the United States military will hold everyone to a highest account. But yeah, they above everyone should know this.
Yeah, I hope that happens. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Admiral Mike Franken, Iowa Senate candidate. You can check out his website, frankenforiowa.com. We'll get links out on social media how you can do that. Now, too liberal for evidently for Iowa, but the things you talk about, good jobs, reshoring manufacturing, investing in our country, that doesn't seem too liberal to me.
Listen, that's just here's the situation in the state. They have a senator who's been in office for 63 years, and a very low percentage of Iowans thought he ought to run again. And there he's at 99% name recognition. He has to get above that number, and the only way he can do it, because everybody knows his record, is by denigrating that person he's against. So they're grasping, and anything that's considered a strength of mine suddenly becomes a fallible thing. And it's just kind of the plan they do. I mean, it's an age-old situation. So too liberal. Listen, Iowa is the state that educated George Washington Carver. It's the state that said women should go to law school, or that women can be in grad school with men, or that was 85 years ahead of Brown versus Board of Education. It was the third state that said, listen, as long as you love the person, you marry who you want. We are a state, we had a state that had really aggressive agricultural conservation techniques in the 60s and 70s, ahead of most of the country. This is Iowa. It's not that we're progressive. We are just forward-leaning. We want the best of everybody, and we want to get along with everybody. And let's not mistake forward progress with backsliding into their concept of 1950.
Yeah, our original intent, friends, I like to talk about the original intent of the Constitution, and I always say that it's putting women back in the kitchen, blacks back in the field, and gays back in the closet. Sadly, at least that's what it seems like to me, this kind of anger and hatred. Instead of moving us in a direction that we need to be, which is forward, we need to be reshoring manufacturing for national security purposes and for our economy. We need to be investing heavily in our infrastructure, and we're on that path. I think we're heading in the right direction.
Well, I think you for some of my, I've got six sisters and a wife and a daughter, et cetera. I think the other thing you might want to add is, where do they want to put these abortions? In the back room? Hiding? Unsanitary situations? Unhealthy situations? This isn't their business. This is a woman's business. And
so are you pro-choice?
I'm for a woman's choice. Absolutely. And as a man, I am poorly equipped to tell a woman what to do. And I just wouldn't do that. Absolutely. And I think in the heart of every woman out there, she's absolutely indignant that she's being treated differently on a different plane than the guy in her life.
No, I worry about my daughters. I've got two daughters. I worry that they're going to be second-class citizens at the mercy of some guy, which is where my mother's generation had to fight from. So the stories that I heard from my mother, I don't want for my daughters.
Well, in those very dire situations, I'm not looking to have a constitutional lawyer, Chuck Grassley, Mitch McConnell, in the delivery room telling me yay or nay what that doctor was going to do for that mother. We need a grip. The Republican Party is using this as a cudgel to club and develop money from the evangelical right, and it's just terrible in the country because it's such a gut splitting and personal thing, and they're weaponizing they're weaponizing this against women.
So how do we pull the country back together? Because we're in a moment where, depending on which hat you're wearing, red hat, blue hat, which T-shirt you bought, that's what's yeah. dividing us. How do we pull that back together?
Well, I've got a history of being apolitical in the military. This is how we work. There are no questions of alliances, et cetera. Just, you know, the country and doing the mission at hand. So, and when we retire from the military, we go about our way. But I believe we've got that brother and sisterhood that we all remember those days. And I'm a farm kid from Iowa. I'm a rural roots. We got along with everybody in the neighborhood. There was a time when we didn't have a problem. But here's the big thing. You know, if you look at January of 2002, this country was entirely together. We had witnessed an attack on the nation, and the Democrats, Republicans were completely coalesced. And although we didn't necessarily step out on the right foot and do the right thing right off the bat, we were together. Now, the leadership that exists, Democrat, Republican today, are the same people that were in a leadership position or thereabouts back then. So we were together, and they led us astray. And the media is part of that. The media is part of this. And the manner in which media outlets have been purchased and minimized people's external influences, and the demise of good radio, demise of small town newspapers, have all played a role in this. And maybe we need new leadership across the board. It's time for a new era. Come together as a nation. Because there's far more that combines us than separates us.
I say the same thing, and I think right here in this hall, you know, labor is the way forward. If we can pull people back together in the workplace, we can fight for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for families. You know, maybe that revived that American dream thing that I grew up believing in.
Yeah, when I was 18, the world was open to me. I was working in a slaughterhouse. I was working for my dad as a welder. I was a math tutor. I had all sorts of activities, and I considered, my gosh, working in this slaughterhouse, this is good money. I enjoy this. I'm tired when I leave work and do my 60-hour work week, and I was making money. I bought a house when I was 24 years old. You could do that with wages back then.
Today, with union wages back then.
With union wages back then. Today, you know, unions were that rising tide that lifted all ships, all wages. Now, today, I'm driving to Carroll, Iowa, stop at a Stop and Shop, and a woman's working behind the counter. I say, how much do you make? She says, $9.50. My heart broke. I said, do you have a benefits package? She goes, no. I said, do you get 40 hours in? Yes, and plus one day on the week. And she didn't have a ring on her finger. So I figured, A, demographics as they are, she's probably a single parent. And she's, because of parents, because of kids, et cetera, because of ex, whatever it may be, she's trapped here in a way. So what's her future? When's the last time she's had a dental appointment? Or when she's been on a vacation? Or when's the last time she's bought something for herself? Her disposable income is damn near nil. This is not the way we live in Iowa. This isn't a life of dignity. There's no unions around that to lift up the wages, and consequently she's in this dire situation. Too poor to do anything else, and too encumbered to move away. We need a different perspective in the state of Iowa.
Not just Iowa, the entire country, yeah. Because what you just talked about is replicated in state after state. And as we're doing this trip, as we're talking to workers across multiple states, it's the same thing. The last question I've got for you, Admiral, and you're listening to the Rick Smith Show with Admiral Mike Franken, his website, frankenforiowa.com. We'll get links out on social media. You know, you've got Rick Scott and his plan to sunset all federal programs, Social Security, Medicare being a big part of that. If that were to happen, we would talk about mass chaos for seniors and for people who are retired in this country. Thoughts on
well,
doing away
sure.
with Social Security, what the kind of bankruptcy problems we would have, the kind of chaos that would bring?
How about hunger? How about sickness, disease? So here's a data point. My parents lost all their meager savings during the savings and loan debacle of the 80s. Now, you're too young to remember
this. No, I remember it.
But this was traumatizing. And after many, 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 many years later, they got 19 cents back on the dollar. But that broke my mom and dad's heart. And they ended up working in the machine shop together. My little mom, 125 pounds in coveralls, well into their 70s. Because they wouldn't take anything from the kids. We could have made them give them a life of Midas, but they didn't. They would not do it. Would not do it. But they relied on Social Security. Without that, they would have been destitute. Is this what we want? Is this America? Is this the America where you've got corporate income that is what, 30, 40 times the starting salary in corporations, where stock buybacks are more than the corporation put in for generating new business or for reconstructing their infrastructure? Are you kidding me? This is capitalism run amok. And somebody in the room's got to be the grown-up, it's got to be the referee, and that's government. And that's government's role to provide clean air, clean water, a safe food supply, a safe environment, education, apprentice training, a good job, a good security, and health care for perpetuity, from cradle to grave. That's the government's role, and that's what the future for Iowa should be, and we should stop the nonsense that pulls us apart.
Amen. If I lived in Iowa, most certainly you would have my vote. The website, frankenforiowa.com. Admiral, I appreciate you taking time for us. Best of luck once you're in the Senate. We'd like to have you come back and talk to us again.
I would love that. Thank you, Rick. Just so you know, we outraised Chuck Grassley, and our polls are tied.
And I'm really hopeful that Mr. Grassley is well on his way. Thanks so much. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Number the talk.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, and we're going all the way back to 1648. More than 100 years before the American Revolution, an early trade organization was founded in the colony of Massachusetts. They called themselves the Company of Shoemakers. Shoemakers were considered skilled craftsmen, yet changes in how shoes were made threatened their craft. The shoemakers were particularly concerned about low-skilled workers driving down wages. They formed their guild in an effort to protect their trade. This has been the basis for much of the trade union movement. The guild members argued that they were stopping, quote, the damage which the country sustains by occasion of bad wear. They wanted to set a quality standard for their industry. To ensure that standard, they set up an apprentice system by which new workers could learn their craft under the instruction of an established shoemaker. Nearly four centuries later, we hear similar declarations from union electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. Recognizing and promoting the professionalism and the skill of their craft is an important function for trade unions. Yet there were some differences between that early shoemaker's guild and today's labor movement. One of the most notable was the names for official duties in the guild. Instead of president or secretary treasurer, the shoemakers of Boston included titles such as a searcher, a warden, and a beadle. Another difference is that the Massachusetts colony outlawed the guild from, quote, fixing prices, so the guild could promote the quality of their work, but could not organize for specific wages. The skilled shoemakers were some of the earliest workers to organize together. Today's labor movement continues to walk in their shoes.
These boots are made for walking.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
FrankenForIowa.com, the website. I got to tell you, Michael Franken, a very impressive candidate. Impressive guy, to be honest. You know, sitting talking with him, enlightening somebody you want in the Senate. And this is the thing that gets me. We're in a moment where Herschel Walker could actually be in the U.S. Senate, but a guy like Mike Franken might not be. I mean, there's in that some bit of injustice. And here to share some thoughts of our interview with Mike Franken, our good friend, the producer, the professor, Brett Pransky. Brett, thanks for being here.
Hey, always glad to be here.
So what did you think of Mike Franken? I mean, you know, we had a beer with him. We're, you know, just like one of that old, hey, he's a guy I'd like to have a beer with. He's a guy we had a beer with, and I liked having a beer with him.
No, I share your opinion about him. He is an impressive individual. Again, he's, you know, he's an admiral, and you know, just all together, just a really kind of impressive guy. Carries himself, you know, incredibly well. One thing that that I noticed that really stuck with me, I kept thinking about over and over again as we were speaking to him, is that, you know, Iowa has kind of turned, you know, into a fairly red area, you know, statewide. Although there are, you know, pockets of Democratic support throughout the state, but, you know, in the last couple election cycles, they've really taken a you know, kind of a turn to the right. But one thing I noticed about Mike Franken is that while progressives might not be, you know all that popular in some of these spaces, progressive values certainly are, because he, you know, he led with progressive values from the very beginning, and everything he said seemed to line up with what we're hearing from the folks all over Iowa.
So maybe we do that turning it around a little bit and just call them Iowa values, because, you know, the idea of feeding people, the idea of creating jobs, the idea of caring for communities and each other, something he talked about and honed in on. Look, I was trying to lead him in different directions, and he zeroed right back in. Look, you know, all that other stuff, it doesn't matter. It's about making lives better. And I like that about the guy. No nonsense whatsoever.
Yeah, I noticed that too. He spoke very directly in a world of talking points where we expect candidates to, you know, deliver on their message and, you know, and give us kind of those pre-cooked talking points. He really didn't. And, you know, very direct in everything he said. And again, just, you know, core Iowa values. I think it's a great way to put it.
No, because I started with it. I said, you know, the knock against you is you're too liberal. You're out of touch. You're all these things, which is what the right always does. And he's like, you know, I'm an Iowan, man. This is what our values are and what they were and what we need to get back to. And, you know, talking about his childhood, talking about growing up here and the hard work, the work ethic that this guy has. And I think that's important to talk about, the fact that, you know, these are folks who believe, you know, they believe in hard work.
Yeah, they really do. One thing I really liked about the Admiral's, you know, approach was that he not only talked about the things that he valued, he also ran us through the history of Iowa and all the different times that they had done things first and done things ahead of, you know, of other parts of the country, many things that we would consider to be very progressive, but he didn't, you know, he never really put that label on it.
Yeah, now you got Chuck Grassley, who's been in the Senate for literally ever. I think he's, what, going to be 95 years old or something like that by the time this ends. Could be the next Strom Thurmond, 100 years old, still in the Senate. I think you want to talk about out of touch. You want to talk about completely out of touch. Every jobs, the economy, education, all things that Grassley seems to be, when he speaks, on the wrong side of.
Yeah, he really does. And again, you... In the past several years, he's just aligned himself with, you know, with Trump and some of the worst things that administration has done through the years, and is still now, you know, signaling that this is the approach that he's going to take should he be elected again.
No, you know, I really enjoyed our time at the Hawkeye Area Labor Federation steak fry. I wish we had these in. Do they have these in your neck of the woods? I mean, because nothing like this event. I mean, they had this giant big char pit out there with these massive chunks of steak. And again, all of the candidates from local county supervisor to, you know, all the people running for state house and state senate, all the way up to the guy who's running for senate and the woman who's running for governor, all in one space, all accessible to the people who took the time to show up. And it was open to everybody. It's one of those things that I think we need to be doing much, much more of.
Yeah, and one thing I really enjoyed about it is that lots of times at these events, if you go to see a candidate, especially if you go to see the top of the ticket, most of the time they come in, they say a few words, and then they have somewhere they have to be. And while I, you know, I can respect that, and I understand that that's sometimes the way a campaign goes, the candidates who showed up to speak at this function, you know, they sat there and they worked the room and they spent the entire time talking to constituents. They didn't hop on a bus and take off and go to the next place, although I know sometimes that you know, that's necessary, needs to happen. But they stopped and spoke to everyone in the room. And I found that really impressive because you don't see a whole lot of that.
You think that's an Iowa thing? I mean, because, they, you know, when you think of like the presidential caucuses and the things that happen here, this is the norm here. So is it, you know, as outsiders, we're just like, wow, this is fabulous. We should be doing this. We should take this home with us.
Yeah, I really do. I think it's an Iowa thing. I think it's a retail politics thing. I think it's a grassroots thing. I think it's something that, you know, the candidates in other areas could really learn a lot from, is this, you know, this ability to kind of stick around and talk to every voice in the room, because every person you touch, every person you spend that.
You're listening to WLAK 1260 AM Amory and WBZH 910 AM W245 CT Hayward. Always streaming on the Civic Media.